Shut up and sit down.
People who don't wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, you're nasty. The Lord is watching. I want to ride it where I lie. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I lie.
Say what? You came back for another Dialed podcast with Matt LeGrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Doering? You're the best. We all can use a good Chinese proverb from time to time. So here you go. A man who cannot tolerate small misfortunes can never accomplish great things. Stay strong, my friends.
I want to go to the zoo and tickle a gorilla and then punch it in the face. You got to cuss yourself out every once in a while. What can I say? You know?
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Von Doering, and I'm here with Lance Hepler.
Lance, romance, sitting here somewhere in the middle of Arizona, probably with crappy reception because I'm currently on a mountain bike ride with my dog Piper, and I just mistimed how we were going to record this. Yay!
Yeah.
Enough for me.
And when I say here with Lance Hepler, that was major air quotes there. People can't see that, but we've got a couple guests that are back with us this week and in studio. We've got Scott Schultz.
Hi.
How you doing, Scott?
Yep. I'm good.
And then we've got Brian, not Eric, Simiotti from Echo Red to Red and Baker City Classic promotions. Do you have an actual name for your race promotion? Well, I guess you can say hi first.
Hello. as far as name, I guess it would just default to bike shop, uh-huh. Scott Cycle and Sports.
Scott Cycle and Sports, that works. So anyway, got the boys back in here. We're going to talk about some bike racing stuff with them. I got more questions and we got more things to talk about. I also wanted to kind of do a little recap because we just had a big race with you guys this past weekend and there's another one that's coming up this summer. So it's a great opportunity for us to talk bike racing. Love that opportunity. That's always good times. But let's do a real brief and quick backpedal. We all rode bikes this past week. A couple of us raced bikes, but let's make this short and sweet because we want to get to the topic and I know that everybody's time is valuable. So Scott, I'm going to start with you because you raced your bicycle and you went to this little mountain bike race called Echo Red to Red that you helped promote.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, it was, well, there's two sides to it. I was there Monday through Friday working with Brian and living with Brian. And that was great. And then, it's hard because Brian is such a go-getter. It's working all day in the field and then doing computer stuff and hopefully getting dinner by 10 and to sleep by 12, but then you stay up till 2 and then you wake up at 6 a.m. and you do it all over again. So that's the race promotion side of Echo. And, my race couldn't have been better for me personally. I had a good race, and I think it boiled down to course knowledge. So putting the stakes in and wrapping the tape is a little pro tip if you want to learn the course.
Sure.
From start to finish. So, yeah, I got on the podium, and I was shooting for a top 10 or 11 to be happy. So I was extremely happy. Yeah.
That way to go, man. That's awesome, Scott.
Yeah. I keep on daydreaming about racing with you, Lance, and trying to stay in front of you as long as I can. And you were replaced by Paul first. So he was right on me, and I'm like trying to stay in front of him as long as I could. And then I'm like, let me know when you want to go.
Yeah. Paul is so strong right now, and I'm really bummed for him because he had a bad race, and it wasn't him personally. He just had some technical issues. I think he had a sidewall gash and before that he had a saddlebag and somehow the zipper got opened and he lost all of his tools and all the stuff that he would have needed to fix the flat. And he was begging people trail side for some CO2 because he finally got a tube to put in there. But anyway, it wasn't his day, but I don't know. He still went out there and had fun more than I did. So, Brian, did you race as well, or did you just keep your promoter hat on the whole week?
Yes, just did that. Kept promoting, or I guess organizing, and just the feeling of making sure everything went right.
Gotcha.
I would feel so nervous being out there trying to race at the same time. And like, if anything happened, I would be out there racing, or I wouldn't be. That would be needed somewhere else. So I thought it'd be safer for me to just concentrate on the race.
Yeah. Well played. Well played, Lance Hepler. Did you race your bike against anybody this week?
I did not race my bike this week at all. I missed Echo Red to Red. It was a major disappointment for me not to make it back and do that race. But I couldn't pull myself away from the March Arizona weather. It's kind of ridiculously nice in Arizona right now. It's like mid-80s and been sunny every day. And so my wife and my dog and my sun-starved skin won out over the need to race, so I didn't make it back for the race.
That's a bummer, but I totally get it. Totally get it. Cool. And then you're slowly making your way back up to the Pacific Northwest right now, correct?
Well, yeah, we are. We've already left. We stayed in Mesa almost 2 weeks, actually, because it was just so nice. But we're going to slowly make our way back this week. I've got some business things I need to take care of, and that's calling me back to Vancouver. But I have been able to ride out here quite a bit. I've been riding gravel bikes and road bikes and mountain bikes out here. And I don't want to tell all the stories because you'll all just be jealous and hate me just a little bit more than you already do.
probably. it's kind of like that weird spring weather right now. We've turned the page, we've turned the chapter. We are now officially in spring, so there's cherry blossoms everywhere, so that part's beautiful. And you kind of get these like little storm cells that'll blow through, but then all of a sudden it'll be nice. Like yesterday, it was like I walked out of work and it was like 5-ish or something like that, or 5:15. It was almost 70 degrees. The sun's out. It was just spectacular. We went on an awesome gravel bike ride last night that, we're back to our Tuesday night dirt rides. And that was the first one, and it was just perfect. It was such a beautiful day. And it's that time of year where it really makes you happy that you're finally like, you kind of got the winter stuff in your rearview mirror. We did have a little bit of weather today, but we're about there. So you're coming back at a good time. You know that.
I love it. So. I know.
Right on. I did not race this week, and it was just more of the same. And it was just nice to ride outside as opposed to on Zwift last night. So I'm very keen on that. And on that note, we're going to move on. Bike racing. Anybody want to talk about bike racing? I think I called what happened this past week, and I think I called that about a year and a half ago, that we're going to start seeing dropper posts on road bikes. I'll have to go back, pull up that audio. I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to see that on road bikes. I swear to do that, since they've gotten rid of the Super Tuck, I definitely think that we're going to see that on road bikes. And I think it's safe, and I think it's a good thing. It gets that center of gravity down, and they can make bikes so light now that they're too light for like UCI standards. So I think that the whole this seat post thing is going to weigh too much. I think that whole argument can get tossed out the window, and I think there's going to be some upside to it. But anybody want to talk about Milan San Remo and how that finished up for us? Lance, do you have any input on that?
Yeah, I can talk about that. One of the things, Mate Mohoric, if you don't know, Milan San Remo is the first monument of the year. It's about a 160-mile race. It's super long, but it's like 7 hours of boredom and like 25 minutes of action, because all the action is usually at the end. There's a short climb and a short descent right before the finish. And there was a pretty select group that Pogacar attacked four times on the climb, could not get away from everybody. And Mate Mohoric had a dropper post on his bike. He had planned to attack the downhill. He risked his life by descending as fast as he did, and he got a gap of about 5 seconds, and it was pretty amazing. The sprinters all had the sprinter's dilemma, where nobody wanted to pull the group back to him. And so he stayed away and ended up winning by about 5 seconds, which was just amazing. Over Vanderpool and Van Aert and Pogacar and Alaphilippe, everybody who was trying to sprint there at the end, he managed to stay away. You made an interesting point about the dropper post. Yes, he did mention right away that he had a dropper post. And these race bikes are so light nowadays that they're too light for UCI regulations. So adding a little bit of weight like this dropper post because they can't super tuck actually is not a bad idea.
It makes all the sense in the world. No, seriously.
Yes. So pretty. It was pretty amazing. It was a fun last 25 minutes to watch.
Yeah, that descent. He sent. It was like a full send. Like he came down. The bike was getting sideways. He's going into the gutter. He's almost hitting stuff, and he was just dead set on making this work. And he went full gas, and it paid off. I mean, and I think the dropper post definitely helped him in that process.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It was fun to watch. It was exciting.
Gotcha. Anything else out there race-wise that you want to chat about?
No, not really. Nothing else really happened.
You're not going to talk about all the triathlon-y stuff that happened out there?
No.
Yeah, we're moving on from that. Cool. All right, let's go ahead and jump right into our topic for the week. We're going to talk about what does road racing look like over the next 3 to 5 years? There's a lot of things that can be debated, a lot of things that can be talked about. There's a lot of writing on the wall right now that doesn't look fantastic. And we've got a couple guys here that are, you know, they wear that promoter hat. They're promoting road racing and, you know, amongst other things. And I'm kind of curious how you can compare and contrast, like, what the road racing scene looks like in comparison to, say, you know, a mountain bike race. Like, you guys just put on Echo Red to Red. You just had probably one of your better years. Can I ask how many registrants you guys had in total? Ryan?
462.
That is fantastic. I mean, if we had that many people show up to a road bike race, I mean, I think that the road bike community would do backflips.
That's amazing, Brian. Fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations. I'm so glad that many people came.
Yeah. Now, what is your what is your record for attendance at Echo Red to Red?
You know, I don't know for sure, but I feel like the best year was high 500s.
Okay.
And I think that was around 2011 or 12.
Okay. So in some time, it's been about a decade since you've had really good numbers like that, and you're just about there. That's fantastic. What do you think? Do you think you did anything different, or do you think there's just an appetite for the, you know, the format that you're putting on, the XC racing that you're doing?
Yeah, our race is pretty much the same. I think I always try to do a little bit improve in small ways every time. But the formula is the same.
Gotcha.
As far as like promoting the race, I think we did do a little bit better job getting out there, handing out flyers and talking about it. Being on this podcast helped too, so thanks a lot for that.
Yeah. Well, before I forget too, I have other questions about this, but did you guys make the e-bike category work? Did you guys end up having an e-bike race? Did that work for you at all?
We did have the category. It wasn't as big by like at all, like, but I imagine, but, I'm going to continue that, and I think we're going to always have that category, I mean, as far as I can tell.
Gotcha.
And hopefully it grows, and I think it will.
Yeah, they're selling those things hand over fist, so it's one of those things where I
people
think...
people out there.
Yeah, they're there. You just got to figure out a way to get them. Now, you guys had really good numbers. You had a bunch of people come out there, and it's not like it's right here. I mean, you're usually like the closer you get to Portland, when we're talking about races in this particular area, the greater the numbers are. And the further away it goes, that you see like numbers start to slide a bit. You guys are 3 hours away from Portland when you're doing the races out there in Echo, yet you still had really good numbers. Is there any secret sauce to get people to travel like that? Because I think that might be another little problem that we're seeing in the road racing scene is people just aren't wanting to travel if there's, you know, not something close by. What are you guys doing there that's enabling people or telling people like, hey, yeah, we're going to make that drive. We're going to go out there. We're going to make a full day of it. We're going to go race our bike.
I think one thing is, and I said this before, like our location for Echo and really for Baker City Cycling Classic too, is we're far away from everywhere. So we're about 3 hours from every place, Boise, Spokane, Seattle, Portland. So we can draw equally from all those areas. They all know that it's a drive. So the trick is just communicating that, oh yeah, it's worth coming to a bigger market. And then, making it like worthwhile. Like we have, you know, big bonfire camping. We're going to have live music, food, you know, it's worth it. I think that's what we tried to do. And then people were receptive to that.
Yeah. That sounds like people have fun.
Yeah. I think from the outside looking in, like last year I did it as a racer. And when I came back again, one of the consistent themes was how opening the city of Echo is. It's not waiting for people to leave. It wants the cyclists to stay around. It wants them to go check out the local restaurants and, you know, support the winery, buy some wine.
Yeah.
And to the point where Brian was telling me the owner of the winery took him out to show him more property for potential new race routes for upcoming years because they were excited about the turnout, how many people came in and supported the community.
Gotcha. So in that note, like when you're talking about a small town like Echo and you're talking about like people with like small businesses and people that are welcoming of having, you know, 400 plus people come out to race their bikes and open their wallets up and spend money in the town. I mean, that's good for commerce for them. And the city knows that, the businesses know that. So as long as the racers behave themselves, which, you know, bike racers, make sure you behave yourself. As long as that is all happening, everybody wins. Like you get to go out there. The only downside is, yeah, you got to sit in a car for 3 hours, but you know what? Go out there with a buddy, do it with somebody, road trip it, stay the night, make it more of an adventure. That's the stuff that we got to do. And now when we're talking about this though, when we're talking about road racing, it seems like we've always tried to keep it somewhat close to the major cities. And it just, the municipalities of all these smaller like suburbs or the city itself, it just seems like they're putting up more roadblocks to want to work with people for bike racing and, you know, getting the permits, getting people to sign off on it. And then all of the little things that you have to do, the dotting of the I's and crossing the T's, like, you know, just stupid little things like outhouses and flaggers, all of these things start to really add up and it becomes prohibitive for somebody that's trying to make a business out of this. Like, you know, Scott, you're trying to be a promoter here. You got to be able to put food on the table and provide. And in the same breath, like you can't be out putting on a race and hoping that you're going to make money or risk losing money. And when all of these things start to add up the way that they do, and you don't have the city behind you, they're almost treating you like you're a nuisance, or they're just, you know, just kind of going through the motions with you. That becomes really difficult. But if you've got somebody like an Echo saying, hey, come out here and race your bike, or you get the city of Baker saying, hey, come out here and do this stage race, and you're going to help out our city, you're going to help out our businesses, and people are going to love you. That's going to make a huge difference. But are people that are going to race their road bike, are they willing to make that commitment? Are they willing to go drive and do that and be gone all day? Do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, I want to, Brian, that when Jake was asking that question, I was thinking about the emails that we're getting recently for Baker, like teams that are hitting us up from Canada who are probably going to be the furthest traveling teams. Sure. So we know they're there. Mm-hmm. And we know that you can cast a net and get people in, like what's Brian saying, in Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, Montana. Yeah, and we're doing what we can to help offset costs for teams willing to make the travel. And Brian, you can elaborate on that more if you want.
Yep, Brian, what are you doing to get people out there?
The same.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, like, here's a quick one. Like, oh, okay, I got the call from Team Red Truck, and they're looking to get, you know, host housing. City of Baker really wants any racers that come into town to use their lodging and, you know, for their transit tax, which supports the economy and everything. So I was able to contact Shelley Cutler at the Chamber of Commerce, and quickly she was like on it. She called all the hotels, try to get a discounted rate for the team, whatever they can, to make sure that if they do make the trip that we can get them a good deal, and help support the town at the same time. Mm-hmm.
What about all the racers here? I mean, do you, I feel like you should have a lot more people from the Portland area going out to do something like a Baker City Classic. Do you feel like you get the representation out there from the local community?
I hope so. I mean, so far, I mean, looks like Boise's is coming up a little stronger right now. Portland's falling behind. We got Bob's Bicycle Center and also George's.
Interesting.
Teams coming up. So, I mean, it's early now, but I hope that Portland area teams see that it's starting to fill up and that we're going to have some teams from all around. You can test yourself to not just Oregon, but the whole Northwest, whole West Coast even.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, we're very centric on talking about Portland-based racing and OBRA, Oregon Bicycle Racing Association-based racing. And when I first started racing here back in 2016, there was, gosh, what, 8, 9, 10 different races, like individual road races that were on the calendar, individual or stage races, we'll say. And then you had your weekly racing. And then, you know, there's just so many different outlets. And then fast forward to today, I don't know how much of this has to do with COVID, but it kind of seemed like the writing was on the wall, but we're literally down to Baker City and possibly Kings Valley. Two races, one being a stage race, which you guys are putting on, Kings Valley, which was on the calendar for April, and then they took it off, and now it's later in the summer, and it's going to be possibly a state championship road race. I don't know exactly what's going on there, and I don't know for sure that it's going to stick or not, but I mean, we were really spoiled. So you think that the appetite for road racing would be huge and people would be banging down doors and trying to put on new races or get teams to put on races or, you know, doing whatever they can to coax a promoter. But do you guys feel that pressure? Do you feel people asking you like, hey, Scott, put on a road race for me. Is that happening?
Yes.
Okay. People are asking you like,
yeah.
Can I ask, like, is this OBRA asking you or is this the race community?
I was on a race team for a few years, probably the biggest one in one of the biggest ones in Oregon. And yeah, I'm still friends with so many people on that team. And once they found out I was putting races on, that was the first thing. Like, are you bringing this race back? Are you bringing this race back? I know there's an audience, but like we always say, I can't afford to go into the negative, like wishful thinking that people are going to show up.
Yeah.
So for me coming into race promoting, I wanted to be realistic with how many people I could expect showing up. And I went with something I trust more, which was cyclocross and then mountain biking.
Sure.
And I wanted another promoter to have a road racing event. And then I could just like peek and see what they did.
Yeah.
Does it make sense or am I going to like die the same death? And I think when we lost a handful of promoters, those handful of promoters were putting on a handful of road races each.
Yes.
So a handful of people left and we lost a lot.
Yep.
And I think that says something for the community that we have because we shouldn't have allowed them to leave. Or made that transition less painful on the community.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help that we went through 2 years of COVID and, you know, things are just finally getting back to quasi-normal. But in the same breath, I still feel like that was happening. It was like the writing was on the wall before we got to that station. It would be lovely to see some of those races come back. I just don't know who's going to want to do it. I just don't know if people are hungry for road racing here. I mean, yes, there are people that want to do a ton of road racing, but on the whole, do we have the numbers that we need to make that happen, be successful, and not be something where somebody's going to lose their shorts in the process?
Brian.
Oh, yeah. Man, I mean, say we got big teams. I mean, I wasn't it kind of a thing that like, oh, you're a cycling team, you're a road cycling club. One of the responsibilities of that team was like, hey, can you put on an event? Put on a road race. So, I mean, I don't know how many teams in Oregon there is, but.
Yeah, that used to be a requirement of being a team. You had to put on a race, I believe. And then they kind of got a little lax with it. And then some teams were still doing it. And then it seems like no teams are doing a race now. And the only incentive that you have to do it is you get like $75 off your team dues through Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, which, you know, $75 to put on, you know, a race. I mean, I don't see any teams are going to say, yeah, we want to save half of our dues and put on a race. I just don't see that happening. I don't know.
It's funny when you ask like Brian and I's our opinion on road racing, because we have to be wishful thinking that racers are going to show up.
Yeah.
Like as soon as Baker was ended last year, the very next day is troubleshooting. Like, how do we salvage next year?
Yeah.
Like, how do we get twice as many people? Because twice as many people is where the race is actually profitable.
Yeah.
And we can invest more in it. And Brian's not cutting any corners. Like right away, he's like, well, okay, I'm going to give the riders what they want with chip timing and make the TT for stage two easier. Mm-hmm. People won't have to stress on waiting for their start times or get them within hours instead of after they eat dinner and mm-hmm. are laying down a bed. I think that it's tricky to get the opinion of why individuals aren't doing road races, because the ones who are there are demographic. Mm-hmm. So the people we talk to, hey, like, why aren't you doing road races? No, I'll do a road race. It just has to happen. So it's like chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
But it's like you almost have to shift your demographic and be given the email list to everybody going to do a gorge gravel grinder.
Yeah.
Let me ask why those thousands of people aren't doing road races, or everybody who raced Echo mountain bike. Because like we know there's a lot of like spillover. Uh-huh. A lot of those are roadies that retire to mountain biking or retire to gravel.
Yeah.
And that's like world tour retirement, not amateur level retirement. Like we still need you for the local scene. And what I've always heard from older people that I didn't believe until recently is there's so many weekday road events that you can get your fill. Like you can get your fill at PIR Monday, Tuesday and Mount Tabor.
Yeah.
And you almost feel like you're like cheating. Like that's not a real like amateur road racing team if you're just racing after work.
So I don't disagree with you. And some people have even expressed that those need to be limited and it can't be like an every week kind of thing. I mean, there's times of the year where you can go to a local group ride on a Saturday or Sunday. You can go do the Savvy Island shootout. Then you can go race your road bike out at PR on Monday. You can race your bike again out at PR on Tuesday. Then you can go to Mount Tabor on Wednesday. And then, you know, who knows what you're going to do for the rest of the week.
Yeah, but you recover.
You recover, and then you go do that again. I've had people say, like, they need to have less of those. They need to make that not as prevalent so that people actually will have the appetite to want to go race their bike somewhere because they're getting that feel otherwise. I mean, you've also got like so many people are racing on Zwift now. And then there's people that will go out and they'll chase segments on Strava. So you're getting that competitive itch scratched in other places. It's like, all right, well, there's not much of a scratch to left to itch for road if you're getting all that input from other stuff. So do you think there needs to be left of that? Should we maybe mitigate some of this issue by trimming some of that back and making PR maybe like a once a month thing?
Well, by default, like the calendar this year is less than last year.
Yeah.
Like instead of having four PIRs a month, mm-hmm. it's down to three.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think Mount Tabor has six or seven races on their series.
Which is about the norm, isn't it?
It's growing a little bit. It was like five, six.
Yeah.
And seven is a healthy season for Tabor.
Yeah. So let's just say what it is. I mean, I think that roadies are going to have to resolve that they're going to have with the fact to the notion that they're going to have to drive. They're going to have to get in the car and it's going to be hour and a half, 2 hour drive to go somewhere. If we're going to find venues to put on races where they're going to actually be welcomed and you're not going to have to deal with like cities shutting down major streets and people getting irked at cyclists even more because, you know, there's people stopping traffic. So if we go out into these more rural areas, I think we'll be able to find the routes that we're looking for. And we might find the people that are going to be receptive to us coming out there because we're going to spend money. So that's the first thing. Then we got to get the people to actually come out, you know, get off their butts and maybe say, all right, maybe I won't race Pierre this weekend. I won't race Tabor and I won't do the group ride and I'm going to save myself and get out there. But how do you, what's the carrot? What do you hang out there and say, hey, come out? I mean, granted, you're going to come out and race, you're going to support a promoter, but how else could you make this an exciting thing for people to want to come out and to race their bicycle? Is there something that you can dangle out there for them?
If the Oregon series, what is that called for road racing when they had it?
It's not the Triple Crown. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
If we had a series that was an honest series where people could actually see what the pecking order was and get excited.
Yeah.
Like as a racer, like if I'm doing any series races, like I'm tallying all the results before anyone else does them for me. And I'm usually like emailing Oprah or the race promoter. I'm like, I already have this, like make it live for everybody.
Yeah.
But you got to have create like Mike Ripley does a good job with the Triple Crown that you just mentioned. And there's if you do one, you're like, I have enough bandwidth to do a couple more. And I think I use the term a lot, but a rising tide raises all boats.
Mm-hmm.
You just need a handful of people to collectively come together and with the same mission. And that's a little tricky, though.
Yeah. I mean,
let's put it out there. Let's say right now we need to make a road series and start now, let it make it grow and then have it continue and build.
Do you think it needs to be something where you have like a big prize purse that's, you know, kind of a 50-50 thing between the men's women's fields and make sure that, you know, there's balanced stuff there and get people excited about wanting to come out and you know, if you can get some people like,
hey, Brian, I was given one of the coolest jobs at Echo working the podiums where I had a pocket filled with envelopes with checks. But it took X amount of years for Echo to establish itself and be able to fill my pocket with those checks. Like you can't go right off the bat and give out money if you're already losing money as a promoter.
What if you had something to where you tied the size of the purse to the number of registrations and you kind of let people know like, hey, we're at this many registrations. You've got like a $10 purse right now. Get to this many people and we go from 10 to 100 and then we can go from 100 to 1,000 and kind of make it.
Yeah, I've seen that before. But
yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think I think that every racer needs to be okay with a little bit higher entry fee.
That was on my list of questions to ask. I mean, for the longest time when I first started racing here, it seemed like a road race was $30-$35, which that to me, that was a great deal.
Yeah.
Because when we look across over at our boys, Matt and Evan, when we're talking about triathlons, a cheap triathlon race is easily $100. Easily. And, you know, some of these bigger races that they're doing, these half Ironmans and their Ironmans, can get up to anywhere from $500 to $1,000. I mean, Lance, it's been a few years since you've done a triathlon. How much were you paying for triathlons when you're doing this back in the day?
Well, the Ironman races were like $600 or $700. And now I think they're over $1,000.
For a race. Where they you swim and they make you run and to do all that to be able to ride your bike. Oh,
and that includes airfare, right?
Yeah. And they're not in your backyard. Good point, Scott. So what is it the triathlon's doing that's making people want to fly and drive and spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars that, you know, we've got roadies that are, you know, putting their nose up at having to pay $50, $60, $70 for a road race. You know,
I think if we add a higher entry fee, then you could offer more prize money that's tied into the race. Like you could say the Cat One Pro Field has a 30% payback. That means the top five, you know, we could use 30% of all the entry fees in that field into the prize money.
Yep.
And then included by, you can get some other sponsor for like some extra prize money, have jerseys, have trophies that makes it like prestigious, like,
yeah.
And good coverage of the winners and
yep.
Something just like a more momentum, more build, more stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, with those big races, you are getting what you pay for.
Yeah.
Like we're even if we were to get that amount of money, we don't have the ability to pay that back with like live coverage and helicopters and like it's a legit feeling that with like I'm paying Well, usually I get my races comped, but for mountain bike races, Brian, how much is Echo?
55.
So I'm paying like 115 to go race the Otter Classic. And to me, I'm willing to pay that because there's some kind of romanticism attached to it. It's sea otter.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so, and that was one of my points too, is like, a lot of people are going to say like, dude, I'll never win any of that money. I'm never going to be up there. I'm never going to be a pro 1-2 guy. I'm never going to be even like a, you know, cap 4 or 5 guy finding the podium. So at the end of the day, they're paying for an experience. And how can you make that experience a little bit more special? I mean, sometimes it's having a notable person come out and being able to meet said person, or just the before and after parts of the race, and then celebrating what they did accomplish and having good coverage of that and lots of pictures and celebrating the person just being there, making them feel, you know, quasi special. You know, it's not something where we all need to feel special, but sometimes when someone recognizes what you did, gives you a pat on the back and kind of you see stuff about yourself. I mean, those little things can make a big deal for somebody, make them want to come back and do it again, as opposed to, I mean, there's plenty of bike races where I've showed up and you go there and everybody's warming up, doing their own thing, and you go out and you race, and then you get back and everybody kind of gets in the car and leaves, and there's a podium and like 5 or 6 people are standing around, and you get the slow clap, and you get to stand up there and somebody takes a picture of you, and that's it. Maybe it's breaking that mold and maybe trying to do things a little bit different. And I think what you guys did this past weekend sounds like that's a part of that recipe. I mean, do you guys want to tell us about the post-race festivities and what that was like at Echo? And maybe we can borrow some of that for the road racing scene.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I was talking to Scott, he was like, oh, they're going to want to leave. We won't be able to keep them for the music and then food. And the timing's off. And I was like, oh, man. When it came to race day, we had a hard time getting the people to move from the food to the music in time for the rewards. So like they were staying.
That's awesome.
I felt like,
you know, when we did our time trial the week before, like I've been to a few time trials, not a ton, but I've been to a few time trials, and it's usually like a very solitary thing. You show up, you sit on a trainer, you warm up by yourself, you go out to the start house, you do your race, you get your finished, you know, done, and you come back, you pack your stuff up and you leave because nothing ever happens. Well, we wanted to see like, how can we capture these people? How can we get them to stick around? How can we create an atmosphere and like almost like a pit area for everybody to kind of go and rub elbows and talk and, you know, be able to, you know, congregate and make it more of a party. And I think we could have made it even better. I mean, had been thinking we would have had like a PA where we can, you know, play some music over and kind of make it a little bit more exciting. And it'd be nice to have somebody sitting on that all day long and calling out numbers and times and celebrating people. But I think on the whole, we were able to get people to stick around. We were able to do podiums. That's something I hadn't seen at a time trial in some time. I mean, I'd seen it before, but it's one of those things where you have to sit around for a long time to get the final results because they're hand tallying things. So we used the chip timing. We had results were done. We're completely done and printed out by the time that the last racer got back to the pit. They were done, and we were able to jump right into doing podiums, and we did a raffle, and we kept everybody around. We had food, and I think that doing that a little bit differently kind of gave us a glimpse into like how we can make that even better. And I think that the same concept of like, all right, how can we reimagine? We don't need to reimagine the race itself. We know what a road bike race is like, and it's fun. It's fantastic. It's hard. You got to train hard for it. But how can you do things a little bit different on the front side and the back side to make it more of an experience for people? And so that they feel like if they're going to spend $50, $60, $70 on a race, like, all right, I'm getting my money's worth. I mean, obviously when you go to Sea Otter, whenever that is in April, if I'm not mistaken, next month, there's a ton of stuff going on there. We can't replicate that, but there's a lot of stuff that you could probably look and say, hey, maybe we can do this, or maybe we can do that. Maybe we can get some more folks involved here and make it a fun experience for the roadie to come out and want to be a part of a road race.
Hey, Brian, I'm going to set you up with an answer for that. I was telling Jake when we had people stick around for the podiums, the level of the crowd cheering for a Cat 3 finisher was equivalent to a Cat 1. And it was like getting me emotional. Like I was getting teary eyed because there's like some of the women's first races. And I was like jealous of them being up on the podium. I was like, I need that support.
Yeah.
You know, like imagine you just got into biking, you got a mountain bike, and you're unsure about this new community. they put on a good race, they feed you, they take you over to live music, and you get called up for a podium, and people are like bruising their hands, they're clapping so loud. I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And then
I feel like we had, you know, I would say close to 100 people.
Oh, easily. No, more than that. Yeah. And it made me think, Brian, of how you and the other Brian and Kareen Vetter have the Baker school that they converted, and we do the dinner. Yeah, we do the dinner and we do the awards there in the auditorium, which is a really, really cool feel.
Oh,
did we lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Yeah, do you want to elaborate on that feeling of Baker?
Oh, boy, you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, on how like people are willing to come in from far away. So it is a very special thing to bring them together. Like road racing is so insular. You show up with your team, you work your team tactics. Like you typically are huddled down in your motel rooms with one or two teammates. You race. Most of the time you're disappointed in how you raced, unless you're one of the few that made the podium.
Yeah.
And people just sulk in that disappointment. The day before Echo, Brian and I were still working, setting the course up, and we went to there's a campsite with a bonfire, and we just cruised up and sincerely thanked everybody for coming out. And that was like, for me, one of the highlights of the race, like the race weekend. It's not on race day, it's not stressful, but you have there must have been like 20 to 30 cars all like sardine packed in that camping site. And to see
there's a big campground.
Yeah, to see the fire, and none of these people are on the same team, but they're on the same community, same cause. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a way to do that with road racing too. And you can do it very casually by having food at the event. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of forced. Like if you want to eat the food that we want to give you, you're going to eat in the mess hall with everybody else here. Yeah. So.
I think food and is an easy one to add in to either post race or.
Gotcha.
And kind of combine it with the awards, and then just having the PA system with music is, and then some type of announcer. These are the little ingredients.
Yeah, for sure. Now, do you think that we're losing a lot of roadies to other disciplines, most notably gravel? I mean, a lot of guys are like they're leaving the road scene. They're kind of maybe over training on the road and dealing with cars and all that other stuff, or gravel is kind of the burning bright shiny object that everybody's kind of gravitating towards right now, and it seems like those might be easier to put on because you don't have as many municipalities and different fees and costs that are built into doing that, and it's just something new. But do you think we're losing roadies to other things, or maybe people are just going away from wanting to race their bicycle as much anymore? Do you think that that's an issue?
I think there's more people riding racing bikes than ever. There are just more choices.
Yeah.
You can use gravel or mountain bikes, triathlon, time trials, stage races, and it's all connected. But I think some take away from others and some help others. Road racing is in a weird spot because I think a lot of the gravel does kind of take away a little bit from the road.
Yeah. I just think back to like a simple 5 years ago, and like we'll say in 2017, I think that there was one gravel race that I could think of on the calendar that was the Gorge Gravel Grinder, and that was paired up with the Gorge Roubaix, which was like a road race that had a 3 mile section of like really plush dirt, if you even want to call that gravel, that you still rode your road bike on. And that was about it. And there was still plenty of other road stuff. And then fast forward to today, I've lost track of how many gravel events are on the calendar. And like I said earlier, we're down to Baker City and maybe Kings Valley for two local races here. Now, if you go up into Washington State, into the WSBA territory, they've got still a good chunk there. I'm not going to say it's alive and healthy, but they've got a much more plentiful offering of road races on their calendar than we do down here.
I would argue that and say it is healthy.
You would say it's healthy up there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I've been looking at the amount of results that they're getting, and they still have multiple stage races in one state.
Yep.
And then I do the same for checking out. So many of my friends live in Southern California, and they have, like, sometimes they'll have, like, 3 or 4 road race options on a weekend.
Really?
Like, they have to choose, like, do I want to stay around L.A. or do I want to go up to Santa Cruz?
Huh.
And these are, like, big races.
Sure.
To the point where, like, they're cherry picking races based on who they see signed up.
Yeah.
Oh, the heavy hitters are going to LA. I'm going to Santa Cruz. So I think this is a localized issue.
Really? Interesting.
I mean, Washington's still surviving. Brian, we'll see shortly how many racers we get from Washington versus Oregon. But
now Washington has a fair amount of road races. I'll agree with you. And I think I heard that they're losing Vance Creek, maybe, possibly. Not sure. But I know that there are still quite a few other races that are on the calendar. And they've got, again, it's much healthier up there than it is here. And I know that there is one primary race promoter up there. And I believe he's trying to retire or move on or do something different. And who knows what's going to happen when, you know, you lose a heartbeat of a person that's the driving force behind putting a lot of the races on the calendar. You got to hope that somebody's going to step in and take the reins from them. But let's hope that ends up happening and that they can keep their stuff going alive and well. But you made a comment, and I'm going to have to ask, can you put your finger on why you think it's so anemic here in terms of the road racing scene? I'm going to put you on the spot. There's a lot of people. The Portlanders are listening, Scott. They want to know.
No, I mean, I'm like, my first reaction to that is just like, honestly, I'm sad because I was on a road racing team. And one of my buddies, David Salzberg, was the promoter of Zone 5 Promotions.
Yep.
And he was such a big lifeline to so many events.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize that until you don't have those so many events to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was put in a weird situation of being able to take over
like
the road races. And like I told you, I wasn't financially fit enough to lose money multiple times right off the bat.
Correct.
So blame COVID or blame my trust in people showing up to race.
I firmly stand behind the decision that you made. I think you and I kind of had those discussions, and I think a couple other people might have had some discussions. Like, get yourself established with the races that you know are going to work, that are going to put food on the table for you.
Or even if you're like, I lost money on a race that was on my birthday, but that was a good present to me, not to lose money, but to have a race that I was passionate about.
Yeah.
Like, I met a new community of cyclocross racers. I met Stefano.
Uh-huh.
Salty pulled me closer under his wing to, like, nurture me into a peek behind the curtain to see how uncomplicated race promotion is. You just have to work really hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not reinventing the wheel to when someone's willing to give you everything. Road races are a little bit more scary. For example, like trying to get a permit, and like I'm trying to get a permit for an event, I've probably left like 5 messages, 6 emails. Just like crickets. It's like not fun. It's not hard. It's just not fun, and it's really stressful.
It'd be persistent, I guess. So
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, I think about the road team that I was on, and it was so cool. Like, I was lucky enough to get up to Cat 2, and we went up to Washington for Tour de Bloom,
mm-hmm.
and the P12 field, and I fully got my teeth kicked in, and it was very scary.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people get to that point. I think there's a lot of attrition in cycling where when you up your categories, it gets to a point where you can't sustain it anymore. You're telling me I need to train twice as hard to get twice as bad of a result?
Yeah.
No.
I'm good. In the same boat as you. I mean, I was totally 100% good with being a for life or Cat 3 guy, because I had fun there. I knew how much time I had to train for that. I knew that I could keep that and be sustainable at being competitive. And then I got that email one afternoon on a spring day in 2018. This is before the wreck. And it's like, congratulations on your mandatory upgrade to Cat 2. I'm like, oh, crap. Keeping up with that. I mean, because you're talking about longer races. You're talking about faster people. And I was racing Masters, and there's just not a lot of Masters Cat 1, 2 stuff. So they just lump you in with the full field. So now I'm racing with guys that are potentially half my age, mm-hmm. a lot lighter, a lot faster, and recover a lot faster. I've got to now train. I was at the time, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a week. If I wanted to be competitive, which I am, I would have had to put in, you know, 16, 18, 20 hours a week to be competitive there, just to potentially try and, you know, finish with the field, let alone get a result there. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And it gets to the point where I'm like, all right, this isn't sustainable. I'm not going to want to come out and race with these guys and get dropped off because I only have, you know, 10 hours. And maybe I just want to try some other things. Maybe road racing's not for me anymore. Maybe I can, you know, do something else. But, you know, that all kind of got changed for me anyhow. It's kind of moot now, but I totally understand where you're coming from there. So that could definitely be a problem.
Yes, I think that road races are like that. You got to be able to keep with the field.
Yeah.
While other, like, gravel or mountain biking, you just keep your own pace.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so, you know, you're always dealing with, like, wow, once you realize you can't keep the field anymore, or what it's going to take to stay with the field, you'll lose people. Yeah. Maybe they need to make it less mandatory upgrades. Like, you know, make it, you can upgrade. You don't have to mandatory upgrade.
Yeah.
Well, when they had the Cascade Cycling Classic, and they had the standalone Cat 2 field,
uh-huh.
I was like, yes, finally. That's something awesome. that I could get behind.
Yeah. Lance, do you have any anything to contribute on this? What are your thoughts?
That's a good question. You know, I've seen it all change quite a bit on my end as well. And I honestly, I can see what the issue is with
I think we're losing you, Lance. You're cutting out there, buddy. You still there? Lance is in the middle of, like, some deserty looking place. It's, I think, Kingsman, Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. It kind of looks like a little, like, mini Grand Canyon wherever he's at, but I don't know. We'll let him chime back in as soon as his phone comes back with reception. So let me just ask a few other questions here. I don't want to ramble on this too much, but let me just ask a few other questions and see what your guys' thoughts are. How can we capture new interest? We just went through probably the biggest bike boom in history over the last 2 years, and every Tom, Dick, and Harry went out and bought a bike, and it seems like there are still quite a few people that are sticking to the sport, and they're still out riding their bicycle, and I talk to folks all the time. I have people coming into the lab here. I see people out on the road, and we'll connect, and a lot of times they're like, they know that bicycle racing exists, but they know nothing of the local bike racing scene. So how do we capture that market? Do you guys have any thoughts there? What about you, Scott?
That's like what you're talking about is why I'm willing to be a race promoter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a firm believer that the net that we're casting got broader with gravel, with Swift, with a Peloton bike.
Yep.
And I know firsthand, because I'll go and I'll ride from my house into the city on routes that I would do all of the time for, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, and I would pass 3 or 4 cyclists. Now I'll go and pass like 20.
Yeah.
And I know they're brand new bikes because I know the year of their bike.
Yep.
And like, yes, they're mainly gravel bikes, but there are also some people who have already migrated from a gravel bike into a road bike, and I'll see them at Savi or on another team's group ride that I'll join in on.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell me, like, yeah, I got a bike when COVID hit and my gym closed.
Yeah.
And it's like, so that's a real thing. And I'm banking on those numbers slowly reviving. And my whole theory was it could backfire, and it could be, it could turn out not this way. But my thing was, I would think that Pelotons, gravel bikes, would slowly have a transition over to road, and those new people would be hopefully potentially trying a race, a road race, mm-hmm. within 1 or 2 years.
How do you envision paving a road for those people to find their way to road bike racing? Otherwise, if you don't create like a wide open path for them and make it known like, hey, these are options, these are things that you can do on your bike, and these are some cool things that you can train for. If we don't do that, they're not going to find their way there, or at least they're going to take a really convoluted path to getting there. And I think we're going to lose a lot of people in the process.
I think there's more responsibility to every individual racer than they know. Like, I was riding a fixed gear bike down in LA, and it was other road racers on road bikes with gears who came up and were like, dude, you kids are pretty fast. You should try a road race. What's a road race? Well, you got to get a bike with gears on it, and you'll start Cat 5 and you'll move up to Cat 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it was some random dude on like a bike trail who had a 5-minute conversation before they dropped us with a bigger gear. The two kids that I was with, one of them went pro for Jelly Belly, and the other one got up to Cat 1, and then now is like he's the sales rep for H2.
Okay.
West Coast sales rep. So he's like heavy in the cycling scene. And I think.
What's his name?
Ryan Cook.
Ryan Cook. Okay. Yeah. I know the name. Yep.
And then Devin Dunn, he actually used to bunk with Jacob Rathy.
Okay.
When they were on Jelly Belly together. Yeah. But like, we came from skateboarding to a fixed gear bicycle to accidentally coming into the cycling scene just because one dude had a quick conversation.
Sure.
So everyone has to have enough time to have a quick conversation.
Sure.
Every time I ride my bike, I think sometimes people who come out and ride with me will be ignored because I'm not necessarily looking at people as dollar signs, but I'm looking at them as lifelines. Like,
sure.
None of us can do this if we don't have each other's back. And, I got a bike when I moved to Portland, and someone at River City Bikes told me about PIR. And again, it was the easiest thing for them to do.
Yeah.
Like, this is so cool. You got a bike. You should check out PIR.
Yeah. I agree with you on this. I think that people who race bicycles, if you want your sport to stay healthy, you have a fiduciary responsibility to the community and to the race scene to talk to people. And if you show up to a group ride, or you show up to a ride, and there's a bunch of people there that don't know what road racing is, they're going to look at you, and guaranteed you're going to look a little bit different. You're going to look lean. You're going to look fit. You're going to look fast on your bike. You're going to probably have a nicer bike. You're probably going to be wearing a kit that maybe has some sponsor logos on there. You're going to look like somebody that's like, oh my gosh, this person's going to tear my legs off. But you would be amazed what would happen if you just slow down for a minute, rode with the person that probably doesn't have near your fitness, or is, you know, would have normally gotten dropped 5 minutes into said group ride. If you slow down and talk to them, just introduce yourself, you know, be a good person, get to know them a little bit more, and then, you know, slowly work the conversation so that you can talk to them about like, hey, have you ever considered racing? You came out to do this ride. We're going to, you know, do some hard stuff, or, you know, maybe that's something that you'd be into. That just creates an opportunity for you to open a door to talk to them, but you have no idea how that's going to affect that person. Because if that super fast guy came up to you and then all of a sudden he was a nice guy, he talked to you, he wanted to know a little bit more about what your interests were, and he planted this little seed in your brain about like possibly racing the bicycle, that person very well could say, you know what? I think I'm going to give that a shot. And then you can say, yeah, keep coming back to these group rides, or get on a training program, or go check out, you know, some sort of a ride that you can do to work up to building that fitness. Cause there's all kinds of rides around here. There's different rides that you can do all of the time that aren't races. And that might be the little gateway drug that they need to get started on racing their bike. So,
and it doesn't even need to be another bike racer.
Yeah.
For example, if you go to a bike shop and you ask them for sponsorship for an event, and they say, we just don't have that budget.
Yeah.
To rewind that, I leave the house almost every day on my bike,
uh-huh.
and my neighbors see that. And every once in a while, like one of them will come up and be like, hey, you really inspired me to get back on my piece of crap bike and uh-huh. start riding again. Then they'll get a new bike and they'll be like, hey, Scott, check this out. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. It's an entry level bike. Like, I'm kind of snobby. So I'm like, 105 or Tiagra triple. I'm like, but a year later, the same neighbor is like, Scott, I got a bike. I'm like, okay. And he's like, I got a Speed Wagon. And I'm like, that's really investing in like our community. He's not a racer. But what happens is like, even people seeing you bike around and you being receptive to them and proud of their fitness gains, they're going to support the bike shop, which will hopefully support a bike race when you go ask for that sponsorship again. So you're helping out, even if it's not a racer, like more people on bikes. Yep. So that's,
what about the notion of putting on a fondo where you can be at the pointy end of said fondo and you can race the thing, or you can let some folks come out that just want to do a cool ride that maybe they can try and hang for a little bit and then fall back, or maybe they can just make it a fun day on the bike. But at the end of the day, you're quasi exposing them to something that it's not a full commitment to where you've got to hang with the Peloton and otherwise it's going to be, you know, game over for you. But you can come out, you can try this, you can dip your toe in the water, and you can see what this is about. You can get to know some more people. Gives you an opportunity to put on an event where you can make a few bucks as promoters, and you can start to build your database of folks that you can potentially kick over into like a race. What do you think of something like that?
Yeah, that
one, you can make it into, well, does anyone still do the like meet the teams ride?
They haven't done that in quite some time. As a matter of fact, I don't even remember them doing one since I've lived here, which has been 7 years now. So I could be wrong, and I just missed the boat on it. But since I've had my team registered with the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, which was in 2017, I've never been informed of any of those.
I know they've been happening up in Washington. I saw some posts.
Okay. They have a healthy, I think, and do a fondo.
Yeah.
That's combos as a party. And meet the teams.
Absolutely.
To play devil's advocate here, though, if you if you do a fondo, I've had this talk with Mike Ripley, like how to help road racing in Oregon. You do fondo, you're hurting the category racing. You know, because like the whole point of a road race for a road racer with amateur road racing with categories, Cat 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, like, you need to earn your upgrade points. You're not getting any from a fondo.
Well, it's not necessarily meant to be the replacement to bike racing. It's just a conduit, and it's a way to get people, or give people an opportunity to get their...
The next stepping stone from a gravel bike to a fondo to a road race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the thing
maybe it's not a charged ride. Maybe it's just an event that happens, and all the teams bring out, like, the barbecue or something, too, or... And it's just a get-together, artificial get-together.
I mean, that's probably the easy, the lowest cost of entry right there is going to be that, because if you're just doing a get-together ride that maybe, like, nobody's the promoter, nobody's putting on, but it's just known, like, you just show up and, you know, like the Rond or the, you know, one of the rides that they'll put on in Portland where everybody just, like, shows up and nobody's promoting it because, you know.
Yeah. That's just how it is. They're also saying, I'm not liable.
Yeah, exactly, but...
Brian was telling me that even Echo used to do this. They used to have a grand fondo attached to the race.
Hmm.
And like, that would be a daydream for us. Like if, I don't mean to talk out of line, Brian, but if Baker was to have its stage races and then on Sunday have a fondo ride, that was a slightly different route, but you have most of the same infrastructure in place. You still have the flaggers out there.
Yeah.
But instead of climbing them up Anthony Lakes and destroying everybody, no matter who you are, you bring them back to, like, keep them within Baker City proper. Keep that price minimal. It wouldn't be chip timing or anything, you know? It would just be, come out and ride with us.
Brian and Green had done that a couple times. I feel like maybe the timing was wrong or something is not quite right, because it just turned out to be more of a hassle than for them. But it would change. Maybe it's just something needs to happen. I don't know.
Now, if you've already got the infrastructure set up and you've already got the people out there in the captive audience and you're just offering like an alternative, you know, for people to come out and just see the venue, and maybe they'll come out and do the fondo and they're like, that was a lot of fun and I saw the bike race. Maybe I want to do the bike race next year instead of the fondo. I mean, you just got to think, like, what is that little gateway drug, that little, like, little starter sample, that little, like, taste test, and all of a sudden, you know, you had the appetizer, now you want the full course meal. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's got to be something out there. There's got to be some other ways that we can, like, open up just conduits to bike racing in general, like different ways to get different people to get involved. I mean, we do our little weekly flogging ride. We've got the first one coming up this Thursday. It's going to be, probably decent weather, and it's going to be an early one. We're not going to do like the full flogging where we're going to completely destroy each other on the entire ride. It'll still be a fun race pace. And it's just more of like the first one where we want to let people get their jitters out and make sure that everybody's comfortable riding in groups again. But we do these things. And last year at the peak, the apex of it, we had 60 people showing up on a Thursday night in Little Camas, Washington to ride and race their bicycle at a race pace. Now we had people coming in from all over the place, but I mean, I don't think that's hurting racing, but at the same time, I don't want to hurt racing, but I do know that we attracted a lot of new people to try bike racing for the first time. And we've got a bunch of folks that are excited to come out and do this again. Little things like that, though, are bringing people into the sport. So I'm going to continue on with it.
Yeah. Man, we'll just next one call up, get the list from Obra with all the teams in Oregon and say, this next ride you guys are doing is a meet the teams ride, and we want someone to represent all the teams in Oregon to be here to help get people interested in racing.
Yeah.
On this ride you do.
Yeah, we've got to be able to find a place where we can just have a huge parking lot or a park or something like that, and all the teams can set up their team tents, and everybody's going to meet, and then we're just going to go do a fun ride. Just a little fun, if you will.
Or a little parking lot where you could have like a standing start sprint to the line. Every team can put one person in.
So
I don't know if I'm like
getting... big. You could have like all the other races bring their stuff and try to promote their race at the same time. So you have the ride, you have the teams, you have the races being promoted.
Yeah, something like that. That
would be healthy.
It would have to start early in the season, and so where we're at, weather's not always going to play nice with us. So I don't know, but I still think it's a fantastic idea. I think that you can definitely do something there. But we gotta. Yeah, somebody's gotta take the reins.
Time.
Yeah, Scott, you need to do all of these things. You got nothing else going on in your life.
I was just gonna say, like, I don't know if I'm getting soft in my old age, but I am leaning towards more family friendly events.
Sure.
Like I'm sitting down with Stefano and a couple other people brainstorming things for the Washougal Mountain Bike Champs weekend, and it's like we have a course. We have two courses, short track and the XC course. But like our big concern is like, how can we make it fun for like the kid that gets dragged out there for the weekend?
Yeah.
Just coming up with little stupid ideas that make sense for kids, and actually talking to kids, like, what would you want to do?
Yeah.
We have like in Portland, we have, I think it's called Parkways, where they shut off the streets and just hundreds of people are out on bicycles.
Uh-huh.
And they're going 4 miles per hour.
Yeah.
But they're so happy.
Yeah.
And I used to think that was so stupid. And I've gone a couple times with like a single speed bike, and just like they were going so slow that it hurt my thighs to pedal that slow on the gearing I had. But the more I think about like all those bikes didn't just appear, they came from local bike shops.
Uh-huh.
And that's starting to open up again. Like they're starting to do parkways. That's good. Like I said, it's my same example of a bike shop has to be healthy in order for a promoter to ask them to support one of their events.
Mm-hmm.
And if a bike shop's healthy, then it's selling product of companies that you could probably ask for sponsorship to.
Sure.
So I'm going back, like before we talk about like, how do we get racers to show up to a race? I'm like, how do we get our neighbors to show up to a bike shop?
Yeah.
That's like my new realistic goal. And that's, and we've talked about it. It's all about having time for more people than just yourself.
Yeah.
So, okay. Everyone needs a warm up before they start cooking it, and everyone needs a cool down after their race. And, yeah, I'd say just start talking to more people.
Gotcha. One more thing that I want to throw out there, and then you guys can wrap up with whatever you want here. But there are a lot of people that watch these guys, and I'm one of them. And it's actually kind of fun, even though it's just like usually crit racing. That's all not all that exciting. But the guys that are doing the NorCal cycling on YouTube, do you guys ever watch any of those crit races?
Oh, Oh yeah, I'm a subscriber. Yeah.
So, I mean, the guy, I can't remember his name, the guy that puts on the event, or who does the channel. He's a fun guy. He's engaging. He's a strong cyclist, and usually it's his cameras. He's got a front and back GoPro that he'll put on there, and he'll boil the race down into the important parts, and then he'll basically recap it and talk about what happened, how the different tactics that were used got him to where he was at. And a lot of times it's him winning, and or it's like from his team, Mike Spikes. Those, for me, I love watching. As a matter of fact, I was just doing my weekly rowing. That's my new thing to try and rehab my shoulder here. And I was doing my rowing, and I had that going, and it enabled me to row for an extra 10 minutes and to put in another, I think it was like 1500 or no, almost 2000 meters or something like that. It was just because I was watching this crit racing. It had me all jacked up and excited. I'm like, what if we had something like that here? I mean, that could be a straight up rip off of what he's doing, but it's just still at the end of the day, it's just bike racing, and you're just putting up a video and then get a couple charismatic people to sit down and talk about the race. And I know that Dylan Wiggins does it, and it's hilarious. And I wish Dylan would do all of them all of the time, and just, I don't know.
I asked him for his GoPro when he's not going to a race.
Yeah.
If I could do it. And he's like, yeah, dude. Yeah. I'll see him Friday morning.
Yeah. So he's doing it. He's got his own spin that he puts on, and it's freaking hilarious. I love his videos as well, but it'd be fun if more people did that. And if we had different people giving different breakdowns and analogies of different races, because you know what's going to happen is somebody who's not racing is going to find out about that, and they're going to go and they're going to watch it, and then all of a sudden they know the course, and then they start to know some of the personalities, and then they start to see some of the teams, and then they start to say, hey, maybe I want to do this. And it would be fun if you could have somebody that was putting out these videos, not of just your Cat 1, 2 people, but all the way down to your Cat 5s to say, hey, you know what? Look at these guys. I mean, that guy's got the dad bod. I got a dad bod. I can do this. And he's only putting out like 300 watts on some of these things. And I can do 300 watts. And like all of a sudden he's making that connection. Like, I'm going to go out and do this. And then you can maybe make a couple other videos like, hey, have you been thinking about maybe wanting to do some road racing? Here's some stuff. Here's a step-by-step process to get yourself started in road racing. And all of a sudden, like, wait, now I've got a play.
This has got to happen.
Yeah, there's a blue book. There's like this playbook that I can use to go out there and start doing it.
Yeah.
We got to do that.
Well, Brian, that's making me think about like 2 days after Echo, you have 4 or 5 different people posting their GoPro videos.
Yeah.
It's like free advertising.
Yeah.
It's like awesome. From start to finish. Yeah.
You guys should be capturing that stuff and be putting that up on your social media like crazy. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, I've been doing that, but I'm just going to make a page on the race website with the photos and all the videos.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's like, it just keeps on growing.
Yeah, start putting. Seriously, you guys need to have your. Do you have an Instagram set up for Baker City and for Echo Red Red?
We got Scott Cycle and Sports, which is the bike shop.
Okay. Well, just make sure that you're...
I need to get a separate one for the race, I guess.
Posting your stories, posting your reels, posting up pictures, and then not for nothing, it sounds bad, but you don't have to dance to do it. Start yourself a little TikTok account because you'd be amazed at how viral those things get and how many people will start watching that stuff. And the next thing you know, you're going to have people that are going to want to show up to your race. No joke. It's just, it's pretty amazing. But...
Brian, I know how we could get like so many people to watch a video. It would be any clip of me putting up Living With You. It's like, why is there 18 half drinking cups of coffee in your house like the movie Signs?
That's funny.
That one got cold. I need another one.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, he sleeps like 3 to 4 hours a night. So.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
You got to get him one of those coffee cups. I can't remember what it is, but it always keeps your coffee warm. Yeah. It's got like an 8-hour battery in it. I got to get him one of those. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. But I'd lose it. I'd have to have multiples of those too. Yeah. So
those are a couple of my things, like the Fondo, the videos, the group rides. I love your idea about getting the team stuff back. I mean, these are things that need to happen, but they're not happening. And we need people that are going to spearhead these things and lead them. And I think whoever does it first is going to see like huge benefits to whatever it is that they're going to want to promote. And I think Scott, I think you could be that person. And I think that if you said, hey, I'm willing to kind of lead the charge on it, I need help though, I bet you people in droves would show up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of two things right now. I did a ride with some of the guys from River City Bikes.
Yeah.
and there's like a dream team. You know, I've been in breaks with like Colin Gibson, and I'm like, I'm not going to ever make it pro, but maybe I could get on that team.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of the guys who makes the decision for that, and he's like, no, we don't want anybody. Like, if we take more people on, we're just going to be a stronger team. Like, we're only healthy if there's other stronger teams. So, like, there's been people stronger than our teammates ask, and we go, no, 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 we like you as competition.
Yes.
And that's why I'm so adamant about having an honest series where people see what the pecking order is. And every year you go after it. Like, hey, this year we hit third. You know, we were third best team, or we got our teammate up to
sure.
You know, second place. I remember I was on it. The team I was on, Wachek, teammate took the series. And the whole team was happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get to live vicariously through them.
Sure.
You need honest results, and you need someone to be on top of it, and you need to make that stuff publicly, like public for everybody. When I was driving over here by myself, I was like, I want to make my own team next year. I want to make a team that is a road racing team. So even if I can't go to road races because I don't want to, or I'm working them and running them, I can live vicariously through other people. Cause I never considered it a waste of time being a road racer.
Mm-hmm.
I like the discipline of like, you actually need to try really hard.
Mm-hmm.
You can sneak through a time trial and you get what you get. You can sneak through a mountain bike race and a gravel, because as soon as you fall off, you're just in a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
And like Brian mentioned it, like you have to at least be able to go the speed of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you are by yourself and forgotten about. But I like that. Like it pressures you to really bring it. But I think there needs to be like anybody who's a team captain or the DS, I don't know what you would call it in an amateur level.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost like a therapist,
mm-hmm.
like just keep them happy, keep them content, listen to them, and make them feel special, because they're putting a hell of a lot of work into something with little payout.
Sure.
Yeah. I still think optimistically about it. Like I'm hopeful that, that someone does the, you know, the Michael Myers Memorial time trial, just got a little bit more comfortable on a bike, and now they want to try pack racing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just little things.
I think it'll happen. I mean, I'm not trying to say that road racing is dying or that it's dead. I do think that there's an ebb and flow to everything in life. And I think that we're just like the tide's out right now. And we're kind of looking at like a, kind of a barren land. It will return, and it will be something that will be good. And I think that if we're coaxing it to come along faster, that would be a good thing. But I think when it does return, we need to make people excited about it, and we need to make it a little bit different so that more people can get involved as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to be more of the same, and you're gonna have to expect the same results. So
there's a big, like the Lance effect.
Yeah.
Like there's a big trickle down, and right now we have...
Are we talking about... Not our Lance. We're talking about Mr. Armstrong, yeah.
So we have, there's a whole bunch of Americans that are at the top right now.
Yeah.
That just all of a sudden they're there.
Yeah.
So like Sepkus, but once he gets more notoriety, that's going to be cool for Brian, because he's going to be like alumni of Baker City.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that like notches Baker up a little bit.
Sure.
I want to know what his path was. Well, he did Baker.
Yeah.
And... I mean, we had like Ian Boswell do the same.
Sure.
But right now there's...
is McNulty ever out there?
McNulty has won like three or four of the first races this season on like long solo breaks that were like, where did you come from?
Yep.
Magnus Sheffield on Ineos. And the more solid results that those young kids get, it's just going to... It's the same with whenever you have a great Olympian.
Yeah.
It's like that country's like, buckle up. We're all going to be doing high jump now because so-and-so is the best.
Yeah.
So I think we have a lot to aspire to be. Not for me, because
sure.
I'm already doing this for me. But for a kid that doesn't know themselves yet,
yeah.
They just see something out there and like, oh, cool. Cycling's a pathway.
Yeah. It's amazing. How many talented kids are out there? And we've said this before, the best cyclists in the world aren't even riding bicycles. Yeah. I mean, they're just phenomenal athletes doing something else. Yeah. We have to make this an attractive thing for kids, and we have to have systems in place. We have to have programs in place, and we have to have races for these kids to go do in order for them to fall in love with the sport and to progress and to do good things. In other parts of the world, I mean, that is their end all be all. I mean, if you go to Belgium, like you go to school to race bikes and you do things, everything that you do revolves around racing bikes. Here, it's just like, you know, let me honk at and flip off and roll coal on this idiot on the side of the road wearing Lycra on his bike. You know, it's just that's the mentality of a lot of folks here, unfortunately. And if we can change that paradigm and we can make it more of a socially acceptable thing for us to be out there on the road and then have juniors programs and have racing for these people to plug into. And the colleges are slowly but surely coming around on offering more scholarship programs for, I mean, for triathlon, it's already taken off, and there are like clubs out there, and there are universities that have cycling programs where you can actually get scholarships. So the more we see that, the more people are going to say, all right, there's my meal ticket to go get my, you know, education, and I get to do what I love to boot. I mean, if we can get more of that, then I think the sport's just going to catapult. But we've got to have that infrastructure that we need to build. And a lot of that falls on our backs. And, you know, our team, like, I don't talk about it too much, but we're doing so much behind the scenes right now to build a war chest so that we can get our juniors taken care of. And not just our juniors, all juniors. We're working on it daily. It's a daily thing, and it's growing, and we're going to do some really cool things, and we'll share more about it when it actually kind of rolls out. But we need more people to be able to do that kind of stuff too for our kids, so that they can make us excited when we then see them one day on the biggest stages of the world doing fantastic things, whether it's for their team or for themselves.
And I will do my part and consider having one child.
Yeah.
that would make my wifey happy, and then we could get one more registration on the list.
There you go. That'll go out and adopt a bunch of kids who look like athletes. I don't know.
Yeah, when you were saying, talking about how there, you guys are working for, trying to booster up the juniors and take care of them. There are other people, with junior programs.
Yeah.
That I'm like the most proud about, and like a little bit of transparency. Like, I want to do a little bit at my races and race promotion so I can have something to give them.
Yeah.
Like, I have so much fun with the Cascadia kids in cyclocross. Uh-huh. They're like 14, 13. They'll enter the Cat 2-3 field and wax everybody. And I'm like, I'm not mad. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to stop, and you guys are, I'm going to retire eventually, and you guys will still be under 15.
Yeah.
So that stuff makes me happy, seeing like younger. I feel like I'm getting older, because I'm more excited about the younger you are touching a bike.
Yep.
Because that's where the enjoyment still lies. You don't know how to stress out about life yet.
That feeling's only going to get stronger with time, my friend. You know, and it's good that you're doing that, because that's important for the community. So I personally appreciate that.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, Brian, do you have anything else to throw our way before we wrap this thing up?
Well, it's a little bit to do with just the ebb and flow of racing. I don't know if you guys remember, but before Baker City, before the Elkhorn Classic, before Obra, there was still racing out here. It has come and gone. Like, there used to be a race called the Horse Seven Hills stage race, kind of in Tri-Cities area. There was the Le Grand Omnium back in the early 80s. These were both in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it has a little bit to do, I think, like the Lance effect. So, well, there was also the Le Mans effect in the 80s that kind of brought those races into play. And I think we're at the start of a new effect. I think the new American racers coming through is what brought, you know, back in the 80s, the Le Grand Omnium and the other races and you know, pre-Obra. But, and then in the late 90s, the Lance Effect brought in Elkhorn Classic and, you know, Combe Plateau and all the other races. And then this is kind of up and down, and I think we're at the beginning of the next upswing.
I sure hope so.
At the bottom, yeah. But we're going up.
Yep.
We're at the bottom, but we're going up.
Every time Brian and I are together, that's our only option, is to be optimistic.
Sure.
Otherwise, we're just talking ourselves out of what we want to try to save.
Gotcha. Well, I think on that note, I think we can call that a wrap. I'm sure that there's a bunch of other stuff that we can talk about. And we didn't even really get into talking about like WSBA and Oprah and what we think that they could do better, or teams, what teams can do better. I know that my team, we're always asking ourselves that question. What can we do better? I ask myself that question all the time. What can I do better? And maybe that's something we can put out there in a closing statement is like, just ask yourself, if you're listening to this, it means you probably ride a bicycle. Ask yourself, what can I do better? What can I do? Just, it could be something just so small, minute, mundane, whatever, but you can do the little things that cause, you know, forward progress or growth, you know, whether that's being just given a little donation to your local junior cycling team or talking to people about racing or figuring out what race organization is local to you and how you can give back or volunteer. I mean, there's a myriad of different ways that you can do it, but if you just do one little thing, if everybody does one little thing, then that will definitely help push things in the right direction.
I agree with that. I have one suggestion that I recently adopted, and I think it's, I think more people should do this, but on your recovery days, when you're spinning a little bit easier, go ride with someone who's not a Cat 1, Cat 2. Yep. Go ride with someone who's not even racing yet.
Yep.
And, yeah, have a fun conversation with them.
Sure.
Yeah. And they'll think, I was able to keep up with you. Yeah. And you're a Cat 2 racer. You're a Cat 1. Yeah. I'm going to try this thing.
Yeah, I've vowed this year for a flogging
ride. That's what you do with me, huh, Scott?
Yeah.
I need to build in some recovery weeks this year for the flogging weeks, if you will. And I'm going to do a couple of the rides where I'm not going to ride with the A group. I'm going to just bump down and ride with the C or the D group and see if I can coach some people along, encourage them, answer questions, talk to them, and get them excited about maybe coming out and trying something. So I like that point. That's a good one. Good one, Scott. Okay, let's do this one last thing before we wrap this thing up. Scott, I'm going to go with you because you're sitting across the table and you look like you don't have anything, so I'm going to pick on you a little bit. You got one last thing for me, bud?
Yes.
Anything. Yeah,
there's a few things, but I'll choose one.
Go for it.
I recently, finally got zone5promotions.com handed over to me.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was a long process.
Okay.
That went one way, went the other. basically, the guy who was working the site is across country, and I don't do website stuff, so I didn't know hosting and domain service and taking over charges. And
I can talk you through all that.
Yeah. Well, that's done, and Friday morning, I'm meeting up with Dylan Wiggins and Stefano.
Sure.
And we are going to have our first delegating homework, who has to do what. And I'm excited because we'll be able to use Stefano's graphic design work to get online. Socials will follow, and I can start opening up registration for my races, which means income.
Gotcha. Now, if somebody wanted to go follow you on social media, we'll start with Instagram. What's the handle there?
Zone 5 Promotions.
That's the number 5, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Zone 5 Promotions. Go look that up and give those guys a follow on Instagram, and I'm sure he'll post some more information there. You can probably look him up on, did you get the YouTube? Not the YouTube, but the Facebook stuff too?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you can go those have been dormant, so pardon like the old post on them. But I'm really excited about the website, and all socials will be linked through that. So within the next few weeks, that's like my new baby. That's what I'm nursing right now.
Sweet.
The website.
Good, good. Looking forward to seeing that. Brian, you got one last thing for us?
Okay, I'll make it quick. I just wanted to pick a shout out to the City of Echo, the Echo City Kiwanis Club, the Umatilla Mason Lodge number 40, H&P Cafe in Echo, Butter Creek Coffee in Echo, Logan Willis Piercy, of course, who owned the property for the race. We're all talking Echo in Echo Mountain Bike Race on the last weekend. Snow Road Winery, Echo Ridge Cellars, and Scott Cycle and Sports, my shop that we basically put the race on or organize it. Our sponsors, Giant, Live, Orbea, Orange Seal, Zoic, Clothing, Endura, Hammer Nutrition. And then lastly, my Uncle Philip and Ross Machine and Steel Sales. and my friend Tony Arusta, they did an awesome job on our raffle giveaway grand prize, which is a custom fire pit, Dutch oven grill, bike themed, Echo Red to Red themed. It was really, really added to the raffle, awards raffle at the end of the race. That's it.
That's fantastic, man. I bet you the Kiwanis guys will be happy to hear that when they listen to the podcast when it comes out.
Right.
Gotta make sure that they know about this, right? Get some new listeners out there.
I'm going. That's funny. I'm heading to their meeting here in an hour or two for the wrap up. So
tell them they're going to be mentioned on a podcast and they can listen.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, right on. I can figure it out, maybe.
Yeah. And then my one last thing will be, the flogging rides, they start up. And if you're interested in bike racing, this is a great place to come out because we've got tiered levels. We are going to be having our A through D groups again. The D group will leave first, and then every 5 minutes, another group will go out. So that'll be the C's, then the B's, then the A's. We're starting a little bit earlier than we normally do right now just because there's not as much light. But as the weeks go on, the start times will get pushed back. And eventually, once we know that we have plenty of light, the first group will launch at 6 p.m. And then we'll have another group leave every 5 minutes until everybody's gone. But right now, starting this Thursday, the first group will leave at 5:30. And if you want more details and all of the specifics, you can go to Dialed Cycling on Strava. We have a club there that anybody can join. And you will get all of those announcements for those rides. And we would love to see some more people come out. So that's it. Cool. All right, boys. Appreciate you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And we are looking forward to seeing what you guys have coming down the pipeline. Everybody, if you haven't considered it, go out there and do the Baker City Stage Race and go check that out. If somebody wanted to go see more information about the Baker City Stage Race, I'm sure it's linked up on the Obra website on the calendar there. But do you guys have an actual website for that?
Yeah, it's Baker City Cycling Classic.
Gotcha.
.com.
All right, go check that out and consider giving that a go this year for some racing. So, all right, we will see everybody next week. Until then, bye for now.